Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here this morning to our next to the last roundtable program of the season. As you know, next week we'll be having our annual visit from the Ivory Tower panelists. It'll be a little bit of a different show, but it will be the same cast from various colleges throughout the region, moderated by David Rubin of Syracuse University, so you won't want to miss that program. Will be our last. Today, though, in our next to the last program of the season, we have another annual event, and that is presentation of the annual award for meritorious service to the community to a TMR member or other community member, but I'm going to tell you, it's a TMR member. So there we go. So get ready, because nobody, well, only Colleen and I and two other people who are going to come up and help me present the award know who is receiving this year's award. Ready? Today we honor a true volunteer leader. This TMR member has served a life of volunteering, giving most generously of time, skills, knowledge, and passion for many years, and has done it largely unrecognized. The spirit of community service was instilled early in life, and as a young woman, she volunteered her time in her church and with young children. When she moved to Syracuse, she continued to volunteer and served on the boards of many community organizations. The United Way, Enable, Home Aids, the Volunteer Center, the Junior League, and many others benefited from her volunteer leadership. Not only has this volunteer given devotedly of herself, she has recruited and trained many others of all ages to serve. During her years as director of volunteers at Krause Hospital, I'm thinking maybe she knows who she is. Get ready. Where she still volunteers, along with mentoring of first and second grade students at Dr. King School and volunteering at her church and her garden club members, okay, you can start coming up now, for her lifelong dedication to volunteer work on behalf of the community, the Thursday Morning Roundtable is most pleased to present this award for meritorious service to Onisha Pearson. Bravo. You know, that award was started in 1972, and it's difficult because, of course, one of the tenets of TMR is that everybody who is a member who is some way engaged in the community and a volunteer in a civic basis. So, but Nita certainly rose to the top and among the nominations this year. So that's great. Before I turn over to the introductions, I just wanted to introduce the topic a little bit. Of course, today we'll be talking with the Onondaga County Commissioner of Health, Dr. Indu Gupta. The last several weeks, we've been celebrating the 50th anniversary of TMR. TMR was started in March of 1965. And so we've been mirroring some of the speakers that we had in those first 2 months of TMR. Well, in 1965, there was no Commissioner of Health for Onondaga County because there was no County Health Department, believe it or not. For anybody who's a student of government or a student of government consolidation, the story is really fascinating of why it took something like over 30 years for this community to finally come up with a county department of health, which was getting to be more and more common. When Ann Rooney spoke with us a few weeks ago about public welfare, as it was called then, We did have a Department of Public Welfare, and that was established in 1938. And the people thought, well, now the health department will follow. But as you know, politics and territories and whatever, at that time in 1965, all of the towns and villages and the city had its own health board, its own health commissioner, with the exception, I think, of a couple of towns and four towns and villages that actually managed to consolidate into two. They really thought that they didn't need one, that it was better. But there were many, and including the medical society at the time, which, from what I read, was reacting against President Truman's, at the time of the post-war period, socialized medicine was coming to the United States. Does that sound familiar? Well, anyway, finally, in 1966, for various reasons, not the least of which was pressure from the state and many, many problems having to do that were obviously health crosses all borders, air pollution, water pollution, and other issues. And if I can read this, and this was from just before the vote was taken, and of course it was County Executive John Mulroy, warned the community that the time is now. Oh, my glasses in the, but really, without that we can't afford not to have a county health department, and we are so glad that we do have. You know, such a progressive department. And I'm so happy to introduce Ann Rooney, the Deputy County Executive for Human Services, who's going to introduce Dr. Gupta. Thank you.
I am just going to take 1 minute of your time to introduce Dr. Gupta. Congratulations, Ms. Pearson, on your award. We could only all hope to live up to that model of volunteerism. That was remarkable. So congratulations. Once you meet Dr. Gupta, if you haven't met her already, her warmth, passion, it just leaps out of her, and we are so pleased to have her as our new health commissioner. We've followed a long journey over this last year, and I can't tell you how happy we are to have her rejoin our community. She comes by, as Sandra said, health crosses all borders, and Dr. Gupta has certainly crossed a lot of them to re-arrive in Syracuse. She comes to us most recently from the UCLA Medical Center, where she was a practicing physician and also was an instructor of medical students. And I think one of the most important things that she brings to us is the fact that she, throughout her career, has been a practitioner. She has been a primary care provider, and she now marries the issues of public health with being a private practitioner. So we are so pleased to have you, and her words of collaboration, communication, and all the, she's instilled me with so much wisdom over just these few short months. So without any further, you know what I'm trying to say. Dr. Indu Gupta.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you. I would like to say thank you to Anne for such a wonderful introduction. I would like to also take this opportunity to thank Syracuse University for hosting this wonderful ongoing event for Thursday Morning Roundtable, and especially to Sandra. Where is Sandra? Oh, to extend this invitation to me. I'm very new to all this, but I would do my best to reach out to all of you and give what I learned in the last 6 months being in the health department. I thought, which I will do, is an overview of public health with special focus for our local priority area for today's discussion. With that, I will start with this. Hopefully it will work. Okay. I gave this topic a name, Public Health 101. 30 minutes is a little short time to have talk about public health, especially the topic if something is near and dear to you. As we know, we can keep on going for hours and hours about that, but I have to limit myself. I am hoping that I can give you a preview, like a movie trailer of this subject, so that you will have enough interest that you can come and visit and want to learn more and more about it, and not only just to see it, but to get engaged. So, what is public health? That's what we think of public health a lot of times. Whenever there are things, we become the most popular in the whole community, state, as well as every in the country, internationally, when there is outbreaks, the big disasters happen. But underneath, behind it, we are doing so many things as a public health, which goes like in the background a lot of times. As you can see, obesity, tobacco, alcohol, all these things are much more creating more devastating effects in the day-to-day health of individual. What I thought I would just wanted to put like a lesson that what will we actually learn today from the public health? So what is public health? What are the core functions of public health? How is public health structured in the United States, and what are the functions? And how do we look from the perspective of federal, state, and local, as well as what groups are important, not only the health department, and what are the current priorities on our county? And the very important part is what is your role? What is our role as a community member? So why it's important? And this is a very succinct and wonderful, complete definition of health. What is health? This is a definition given by WHO, World Health Organization. In 1948 was the first one, and in 1998 they added one more word. So which is a dynamic state of complete physical, mental, spiritual, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. We think of health as health care, and we have to start dissociating from that part. When we say health, it means these are all things which are inclusive of it. And when we talk about public health, And when we talk about the public health, what as a society collectively we assure the condition in which people can be healthy. So we have to combine that, what we think overall, and also combine with what the environment brings to the table. Vision of public health is healthy people, healthy community, and mission is to promote physical and mental health, prevent disease, injury, and disability. Sorry, I'm not able to see this side. It's kind of hard in the PowerPoint. So what is important is to, what does the medicine do? As a private practitioner, every day, that's what I did, save life one at a time in my office. And as a public health practitioner, this goes beyond one person, and it becomes more, you're saving lives of hundreds of thousands and millions of people. The role of public health, as we know, I think it just probably rings a bell to everybody, is global Ebola outbreak. This is very important. We have played very important role. Global Ebola outbreak to multi-state measles outbreak recently, as it has completely finally gone away. Hurricane Sandy. You know, the list goes on essentially, and all these things which are indicative that public health agency or departments have to work across many boundaries to have what we want in protecting and improving the health of the community. So I will go into specific now what the top 10 causes of death in the United States is. Heart disease and cancer are always the winner. And within these 10 causes, as you can see, the stroke, accidents, diabetes, infectious diseases, and also intentional self-harm, which is indicative of the mental health. So again, the theme comes in. This is, we are looking for what are the top 10 causes of death in the United States. That's how we measure how we are. What public health done is because of so much population-driven intervention that it has increased the life expectancy in last almost 100, over 100 years now. We have new data also from 47 years to 78, and the new data just recently came out like 83, 84 years of age. So that's a lot to have achievement, which can be only done by having population-driven interventions. So the public health, some of the achievements, just to as a reminder, I think you all of you know, but as a public health person, we like to show off. That is very important. We should do that. We don't do it enough. I think that because it's like a drug companies, or I was in private sector, so it's all about how we try to market is, and that's what I'm trying to do, is trying to give you what public health does. And even though you may not know it or may know it, so I'm just not taking his presumption is not in my dictionary. So I'm going to go and say vaccination, which is very important, as you saw in measles outbreak recently, that the people who were not vaccinating are the one who created the problem in terms of having a problem in the community. Safer workplaces, safer and healthier food. We are talking food inspection, having food outbreaks. That has prevented a lot. Motor vehicle accident, we can't tell enough. By giving the example of seat belt as well as car seat, it's very important. Control of infectious disease, and also the for the decrease in death from the heart disease and stroke, by having a lot of public health education, by educating people to avoid wrong foods, and also increasing physical activity. Importance of tobacco, this is one of the very milestone in the public health, because tobacco is so much related with so many negative consequences, and healthy mother and babies, and the list goes on. So just to give you, I'm not trying to make you all the public health practitioner, just to give what we do and what is the basis of that, essentially. So we talk about always three core function and 10 essential services. What we mean by that is this is a typical wheel in public health, which practitioner, as we know, is. What I would like to pay attention to, there are three core functions are assessment. Whenever we try to assess, even in any organization, you want to know what are the problems in what we are dealing with. If you have a business, you want to know, are we doing good or no? So we do assessment. This is the part which deals with a lot of monitoring health. Then the second core function is the policy. So depending on what we find, how big is the problem in the community, you will come up with some kind of programs, designing intervention. And based on that, if you did design intervention, you have to see how much effective we are. And that's where the assurance part comes into the picture. And going into the little bit details of this for a few 30 seconds is, when we say assessment means we are doing community health assessment and by registries, we have different bureaus, and I'm going to give you some glimpse of that also. We are collecting a lot of data for what is happening. We work with the state and federal. There are different registries, from cancer registry to the birth registry as well as death registry, which we get a lot of information. And based on that, we can say what is happening, what are the trends in our local community. Then all this, the other part is the infectious diseases, which we investigate infectious, waterborne, foodborne, vectorborne. You might have heard all this going on in the community when you see the news. So next time when you hear it, you will know that we continue to monitor it. We also, based on what we find, what problems we found, we take that and then we can do health education and do health promotion based on those findings which we have. And to do that, we need to work with partners, various partners. They could be other private sector, civic group, NGOs, faith-based community, and the list is unlimited. And when we do partnership, we really have to see, are we doing good what we do? So then we do evaluate the programs and to see what we can do to quality improvement. And how do we do that? By the evidence-based practices. And that's what they come out of the research. So that's what we implement that in what we do. We, based on what we are doing it, we can do strategic planning and enforcing laws also that we do in certain areas. And access to care, for example, immunization and home care, which we do. And linked to primary care. If we don't have it, we try to promote that also. And last but not the least part is the public health workforce. We have to make sure the next generation of public health workforce remains competent, because this is a very important part, and the leadership also has to be there. So these are the pretty much, I know it's a lot to digest, but mainly just to see, we continue to do assessment and policy development and assurance, and these are the things embedding all these functions which we do. So structure of public health is, this is the health department. This is health department works with public health system, and I'll tell you what public health system means in next few slides. We work together with the community partners and with workforce, which builds our operational capacity, which means we need infrastructure to develop that. and which in fact impacts the various community programs and what community we public health activity do in the community, ranging from chronic diseases and infectious diseases, which ultimately leads to the better health outcome and reduced disparity and better outcome. And the one thing we also try to pitch, if we invest in these two areas to build infrastructure, we certainly will have big dividends. In financial point of view, I was a private practitioner. To survive in my own private practice, I had to make sure I balanced the budget. So that is very important. And then how can I survive and continue to grow? That is very important to have that, because what is the big dividend here is health. What kind of public health department we call the local decentralized. What it means that we work under our local governance. As you can see, there are other styles of public health department who work with the states in different capacity. Just to give you a visual overview, I'm a visual person, so I think so all these green states you can see is not from the green from politics point of view or the blue. The green is for that we are, all these state health departments work under local governance. We do work with the state and federal, but then we are independent body working our local jurisdiction, so we are accountable to our local community. Other ones work with the state, so their accountability is a mixed combination from that point of view. So this is our organizational chart, and I just thought I'll just give you some overview of what we do as a health department. So our health department is housed with the human services, which Anne oversees. And we have different bureaus. Probably you can see that all right. So I will start with the Bureau of Disease Control. This is the bureau which is responsible for investigating communicable diseases. You all heard of vector diseases from Lyme disease, West Nile, Triple E, from pertussis and TB, and also including STD, including HIV, and now increasing rates of syphilis in our community. So this is a very important department. All these departments, all these bureaus, which we call it in our terminology, they work together to achieve what we do to protect and improve the health of the community. Some of the areas, Department of Environmental Health, which works with the animal diseases. You hear about dogs and rabies and all those things. Tobacco control, we do enforce the selling of tobacco to minors and all those things. They are part come into environmental health. Also, we work with the healthy neighborhood to oversee what is happening with the housing in terms of radon, in terms of lead, because all these have negative health effects. We also work with the vector-borne diseases, mosquitoes, the season is coming, and tick-borne. These are the things which we continue to monitor. Public health engineering works with the land development and water supply. That is very important for our everyday life, which we don't realize it, but there are people who are working every day in the background and keeping the community very safe. The maternal child, this healthy family, is the part, is the a bureau which is which houses our public health nursing, which is a community health nursing to promote health and health of women and children, which are considered high risk especially. That is a very important area. We are working constantly every day to reduce infant mortality and also provide support to these very vulnerable population. We work with the community partners to give education and empower these women. We also have early intervention and preschool special education, which is housed with the healthy families. We also provide immunization to community members. And our WIC program, which is a state and federal program to improve nutrition and health of pregnant, postpartum, and breastfeeding women and children. It is very important because this is overall affect the health of these women and children. Now, health promotion and disease prevention, this is the next department, which is the very key, and it works with all of them to promote what is happening by reaching out to the media, doing all these, helping other community members in their agencies or community-based organization to help in designing different policies, especially for healthy neighborhood, and food and nutrition. So that is very important. They also work with the lead management part in housing as well with the community partners. The family planning is a part which is housed in health department. It is their parent is Syracuse Model Neighborhood. This family planning service is very important to both to male and female. They provide the reproductive health services to our community. Surveillance and statistics is a very it's a main support. It's like a blood supply to us, essentially. That's how I would say it. Because without us, we can't do anything. This is how we get the feeding of data into the system, and we can do the trends and then see what is happening in the community. Based on that, we can decide which are the areas which we have to focus. We also, in this, we also get the birth and death registry in this area. Our last but not the least is the Center for Forensic Sciences, in which we have housed the Center for Medical Examiner's Office, which provides comprehensive medical investigation to establish cause and manner of death for any unexpected and unnatural death. We not only serve to our county, but also to our other neighboring contracted counties. Also, we have lab in there, forensic lab, which provides very high quality scientific lab services in support of justice and public safety programs for the citizens of our community as well as to some other counties. So this is sort of a quick overview just to see that what we do and what you are expecting us. So at least I think you should, I feel that you should know about this. Just to give the fiscal part of it, not to bore you with a lot of details, but again, just a little less than half of our dollars come from the local dollars. Rest of F are coming from the state aid, state grant, and some federal funds. In terms of expenses, that are a little bit over 50% of is dedicated to the special children services, and rest of the other thing which I just went into the prior slide with what we do is the programs we use those dollars for sustaining those functions. The grants especially is also dedicate some of the areas to disease control, environmental health, all those important functions we do that. So just to give you the fiscal part of it, we are fiscally responsible and we have a balanced budget. Just a couple of words about NGO, the non-governmental community-based organization. Instead of just saying anything more, the Institute of Medicine in 1999, very specifically, and it is a very clear, very great expression that determination of health are beyond the capacity of any one practitioner, i.e., for example, health department or whatever other members of the health system when I'm talking about is doing, or discipline to manage. We must collaborate to survive. It is very important. Or disciplines as professional attempting to help our community and each other. We are there together in this to improve the health of the community. To have a good, now I'm going to talk about public health system. What system means, we are all together in there. We need to be very strong partner. We should have a very strong channel of communication, and we should have a system-wide health objective. It doesn't mean that I'm saying that as a health department we should do that. Whoever our partners, all the partners in the community are the one who should be raising that voice and say, this is the health objective we need to do. We need to do the resource sharing because budgets are constrained for a lot of people, for all of us actually. Leadership is very important. A lot of time we do become very important and become the leader as a public health agency. And of course, this is very important part of it. We have to continue to collaborate to give the feedback loop to all or to all the levels. So a system of partnership which is not only included, it means these are the, what I'm trying to say to you is that we work together with so many partners, not in on silos, but together with all of them, we are very interdependent of each other. And when I'm trying to say that I rely on all our partners to help me to what we are trying to do to improve the community's health. And a public health system is, this is what you can see, is a public health agency, this is, we are in the middle, but you will always find yourself in this maze. I don't want to call it maze, it's like a beautiful galaxy. It's a beautiful, perfect picture. But here we all start, we are collected together and joined. So if you see from home health to the transit to elected official to correction to physicians, to the hospital, EMS, neighborhood organization, civic groups, and volunteers, and all those. All those, everybody is so important in this debate and discussion that we are part of the same puzzle. That's what I say. That's how I did as a, even though as a private practitioner, when I did as a healthcare, I couldn't do taking care of my patient on my own. I needed everybody in there to participate with me. What I mean by that, I'm going to go to the next one. This is a very important discussion. I think we need to look into what is the, which we call in social sciences, social ecological model. We apply that. I applied personally when I took care of patients, and I learned. My patients made me who I became today. My interest in public health rose because of what I did every day taking care of the patient, because certain things I could investigate, I can diagnose, I could prescribe them, I can send them to specialists, but what I couldn't do, I couldn't affect some of those things which are not were not in my control. And that was very frustrating part, and the journey which took me to try to find what could be the solution. Do I have solution? No, I don't. The only solution I have many partners who I can work with to achieve the same goal, and that's what I'm trying to do the pitch today, and then I hope you will agree with me. So I would start with what we are, what we bring to the table as individual. So as an individual, what I bring here is in this model is who am I as an individual? What is my age? What is my sex? What is my race? What are the biological factors? What is my family and personal history? And that is affected by, this is by what is my behavior. I was born as a child, but what became is how my individual behavior was. Did I smoke? Did I drink? Did I do physical activity? What did I do as a person? That affects over the lifespan. That started to affect that. Then what was affected, these personal behavior gets affected by the social, family, and community network. What kind of support system we have? Which in fact is affected by what kind of living condition we have. Do we have jobs? Do we live in poverty? Are we well off? Do we have enough access to healthcare services? What kind of public health system we have? What kind of support system we have? So this ultimately leads to what kind of economy we live in. Do we have enough sustainable economy, which is the outside circle, in our local community, our state, or even at the national level? And we are talking global perspective. So this is a very important thing. This is something which is applied. So whenever we do any kind of, whether doing something inside a practitioner, as an internist, as a hospitalist, as an educator, when I try to emphasize that, what we try to do is we can do a little piece of it. If we want to really impact, we have to work together. So with that, I'm just going to take it some area for the local, what we call the prevention agenda. It's kind of big words, but what New York State Department of Health actually works with the local counties and comes with, based on how the community health assessment has depicted, comes with some kind of recommendation, and these are the priorities they come up with. Every county is expected to pick two priorities. Even though we picked two priorities in our county, which I'm going to emphasize, which we did, having said that, does not mean we don't do anything. We continue to focus on all of the areas which are important to us. What I mean by that, I'm going to go into one by one. So first is, how is our, this is called prevention agenda. These are the things which we'll show it, and that's how designated by the New York State Department of Health. If you go to the Department of Health website, you will see that way, and then you can actually look a lot of information there too. So how is our health status, and how is our health disparity locally? I'm just going to give you some graph, and I've tried to walk through fast, just to give you not enough, but at the same time not to create confusion. The green graph is our baseline, which is given by Prevention Agenda 2017. This is our benchmark, and red is our Onondaga County. So what I want you to focus is, how are we doing in terms of red? So this is our, any community's life, how we are doing is based on what our death rates are. How are we doing? Are we living longer enough or no? So before, what we call the premature death rate, in our county, how is it? Overall, if you look, we are not bad, actually. We are okay. But when we look into disparity, there is a significant disparity. If a person of a if somebody is African-American, there is a little bit over two times highly likely that person will have a premature death before age of 65, which is of a concern. If somebody is of Hispanic race, this is the rate is even, it's a 3 times likely, which is something we need to look into it, that what can we do and reach out to our community partners and trying to see what can we do jointly to address that issue. Going further is when we look into how many people are hospitalized, and that is something 18 and over. Overall, if you look, we are actually okay. We are below the benchmark. So, yes, can we celebrate? Really, no, because our health disparities, again, is a problem. Because if you are a Black non-Hispanic, that's how the Census Bureau actually designates, you have a higher likely, a little bit over two times, more likelihood to have preventable, when we call preventable hospitalization, which takes us to that, are these individuals getting enough health care which could have avoided hospitalization? The further going into, in terms of when we are talking Hispanic race, when if you are Hispanic, then it's lower, but again, are we really seeking the care? That is something, a little bit of a bothersome pattern started to emerge is here, that rate is started to go up, something we need to continue to monitor. When we are looking for infant mortality, all of you have heard a lot in our community for last several years, we did not put the benchmark here because overall the Onondaga County, which is the green line here, is close to the benchmark which is designated for prevention agenda. So we are pretty much close, and our trend is in the county is going downwards and closing to the prevention agenda. But when we look into the Syracuse city, it was high. Even though the trend is going down, it remains elevated. So we are very diligently working with a lot of partners. A lot of is going on. I don't have enough time to go into that, but certainly I can assure you that that issue has continued to be discussed every day, and we are working with our partners in addressing this issue. But again, if you have any suggestion, any ideas, all ideas are welcome. I'm the person who say think out of the box, and certainly we will be very creative because that's what we need to achieve what we do. When we also look again, the racial disparity is very, very prominent here also. African-American infant has a highly likelihood of dying as compared to the if it's a white infant. And here we are actually, if you look at the trend in health, what we do when in community health assessment in health departments and when we do data trending, that's what we try to do is, are we doing any progress? Because that's what we do assessment, and then we go back and try to look what are we not doing any good or right or not right, and try to improve that. So here we are looking at that we have a somewhat downtrend. The bothersome parts start to emerge. In the white infants, we started to see an increase. So we have to start paying attention to that part more also. The other second prevention agenda deals with the healthy and how are we doing in terms of healthy and safe environment in our community. And when we talk about that, a lot of times seniors, baby boomers, all those things come into the picture. How are we doing? And one of the indicators is that how are seniors having hospitalization rate? It means, do they have safe household? Do they have enough safety at home? Are they getting a really good meal and nutrition to keep them going? And overall, as a community, we are doing fairly okay. We were actually doing doing better than the overall benchmark. But since 2010, the rate has started to go up, which is, again, becomes concern because what it indicates is, are we having with the especially increasing rate of increasing numbers of boomers in the community throughout the United States, are we having enough support for our seniors? That is a very important part which we all need to think about that, because if we don't address that, we don't have much further data than this. Are we going to have we crossed this benchmark? That is a very concern, because those seniors will end up in the hospital, and they suffer a lot of negative consequences. The other thing which we look at, the assault, especially for the younger individual, it's very important overall as a community. How many people were hospitalized as a result of assault? Overall, as a community, we are below the benchmark. So yes, can we say it? No. Again, that issue comes it is here when we look into the racial disparity for someone who is African American, it's a 10 times likelihood of having hospitalized because of assault-related hospitalization. And if you are living in a low-income area, that rate is, that again indicates that it's almost 9 times highly likelihood. So that is an area which again, ask for the collaboration for many partners. What can we do to improve? Do we have enough economic sustainability? Do we have enough job? Do we have enough law enforcement there? Do we have enough education and empowerment for the community to do some impact there so we can actually address this problem? The third prevention agenda deals with the how are we doing in terms of chronic disease in the Onondaga County? One of the focus is always been is the how what is the obesity rate in our county? And as of the recent data, 28% of our Onondaga County residents are obese. If you look at some recent past data, they said about 21%, but according to CDC, they have changed the way they measure now, and they have asked us not to compare actually apple to apple here because their methodology has changed. But having said that, 28 is, you know, not that great number. Even though as a national perspective, we are doing okay, as the next slide is going to tell you, is from the nation, we are, the rate is 35%, and we are less than 30%, but we are still high. And when we are talking prevention agenda, this is like a 23% here. In terms of the children, that is, again, we have 16% of children are obese, but when you have to look at the methodology, statistics, you have to be carefully looking, how are we collecting the data? Depends on how many schools participate, depending what information we get. That rate is actually indicative of that. But we should take this opportunity, 16% of children, even though reported, it may be less, it may be more, we should start addressing, which we are doing it. So this gives you a perspective for our local obesity rate. Why? Because obesity has so many negative consequences, as you heard several times. I'm not going to bore you, but I will say that reminder. High blood pressure, heart disease, stroke, diabetes, depression, arthritis, sleep apnea, and also cancer, not to say that to least. It's very important to have that in mind, that obesity is not only, we are not talking from aesthetic, we are talking for negative health consequences, and it is preventable. That's the beauty of that, it is preventable. Going for the smoking, Onondaga County, we have still remained persistently high rates of 20% of Onondaga County residents smoke. And as we all know, this is a continuous discussion and not a debate that smoking has a negative consequences from lung disease to heart disease, stroke, and of course cancer. So that is very important to do to remember. In terms of diabetes, how are we doing? In terms of what we look is the hospitalization. What indication, why do we talk about hospitalization? This is for the children less than 18 years of age. The hospitalization rate has increased. What is telling us is they are not good control of, these children are not well-controlled diabetics. Again, the debate is, do they not have enough healthcare provider? Do they have health insurance, or do they not have enough economic background or prescriptions that they can afford the medication? So that, again, goes into the same debate that what are the root cause of this? Why are they being hospitalized? And the same for the individuals 18 and over, our rates are continuously increasing. And that is, again, not a debate, it's a discussion that what is the cost for that and how can we solve it, hopefully try to make a dent in it, if not completely solve it. Just to give you some local data in terms of the cancer, and so the red graph is the heart disease, and the green is the cancer. We didn't put the New York State data, but we are pretty much, in terms of heart disease, we are actually doing quite well below the New York State agenda. In terms of the cancer data, we have crossed that line. If you remember, many slides ago, I showed you that overall, out of 10 leading causes of death in the United States is heart disease. In our local community, the heart disease actually is doing quite well, but cancer remains high. So that is something we again look into the smoking. We look again into what are the other, again, socioeconomic things, obesity, all these things come into the picture also, so we have to remember that. The next part is the how are we doing in terms of HIV, STD, and vaccine-preventable diseases. The flu, I'm just going to, this is our recent influenza, influenza, how we did overall. So we continue to educate and empower our community, and this is how we go in our website. This information is all there. The influenza rate is decreasing now, and but again, we will come back again and continue to have discussion. We continue to monitor that. We pretty much mirrored the rest of the state and the nation. This is the new HIV diagnosis. The reason I put this slide is just to bring it to attention. Overall, in New York State, we do very well in terms of having new diagnoses below the benchmark. Having said that, even though if someone is African American, we are still below the benchmark. This is the green graph we are talking about. We are still below, quite below than the benchmark, which is put forward by the New York State Department of Health. But we can see the trend is rising. It means that if someone is African American, the likelihood of having getting HIV is higher than if someone is white. That is something to import to keep that in mind. STD rates, we have a very high gonorrhea rate. This is for the women. In 2012, it spiked quite a bit. A lot of programmatic intervention were done. And the rate is decreasing now, but still we are way above the target, and we have continued to do that work by education and also testing and treatment and reaching out to the community partners. This is in the males. This is the same trend, decline. Chlamydia is the same. We have higher rate, as you see the top graph, but the trend is declining, which is something, yes, we can say we are doing okay, but doesn't mean we have to be complacent. That's an important message we always remind ourselves. Now the thing comes out, this is once forgotten disease of syphilis. You probably heard in the news a couple of months ago, is we didn't put the New York State here. What is the targeted is, ideally, there shouldn't be any. What we are trying to do is sustainability point of view. It should be less than 10. That's what the target. But in terms of what we are looking at, in 2010, we had this is a rate. This is not absolute number. Our absolute number, sometimes we get confused because absolute number may not seem that high. So you have to see how exponentially in last 4 years it has increased from 4.4 to 23. And then also we have surpassed the rest of the upstate New York quite a bit, and our county we are not number one, but we are actually quite close, which reminds ourselves that what is happening in the community. So that is a great example that when we found that information, we reached out to the community partners, including community-based organization, as well as the private providers. We did a very great campaign, which is going on. And we will continue to monitor and assess. As I was showing you the core functions, what we do is we did assessment, we created some kind of intervention and reached out to the partners, and we are in this, again, assessment of the phase, trying to see, did we do okay? What can we do to make it better? And we will continue to do that. This is an example how we function. So going forward is the fifth prevention agenda, is that how are we doing with the women, infant, and children? With that one, the overall, if this graph is going to is giving you an idea about if a mother who is a Medicaid patient, what is the likelihood having a preterm birth? And as you know, if the woman has a preterm birth, the child suffers negative consequences. throughout the lifetime, not only at the birth. So that is, it is almost 1.27 times highly likelihood having preterm birth, which is something area, again, we are trying to see, why are these women having these preterm births? What can we do about it? And now something I think we should celebrate also. I have given a lot of negative things, but I believe in positive is much more stronger than negative. With that, I would say our teen pregnancy rate in our county, as you can see, is steadily declining. Does it mean to say that I'm going to celebrate, but at the same time, I'm going to say that we shouldn't be complacent? It means we should continue to learn from this lesson and have a sustained downtrending of this data at this point. Just to give you a local data from the zip codes, as you can see from 202 to 2028, this just is a busy slide just to focus on the green aspect of it. That negative means we are making progress, which is fantastic. In terms of the spacing in a woman's life is very important. I know as a woman, when I had children, I wanted to have enough space in my children, two children, so that I can really do my work and continue to do what I do and be a productive part of the society. And the same thing is said for all these women. If they are having babies not spaced apart within 2 years, that affects, can they finish their education? Can they find a right employment? Can they get out of the poverty, a circle which has they been gone into? So this data is a very indicative of that. So the reason I'm giving back to the same theme is these are data which giving us a lot more than the absolute number, trying to think what is the cause of it, essentially. The last but not the least is the mental health and substance abuse. How are we doing in their county? So if you look into that, what we call BRFSS, this is a survey, 16% of our community members have identified that they, excuse me, they feel like they felt poor in poor mental health for pretty much almost 14 days, almost half of their month, which is quite significant. What is happening? And that is also can probably explain that we have a higher suicide rate, which is actually uptrending, which is again a concern. That goes to the cause why this mental health is happening. Some of the causes we look, are we drinking more? But as a county, seems like we are pretty much standard like anybody else. But of course, the rates of illegal drug use are quite high in our county. And if you look at the Syracuse, which is the red graph here, Onondaga County is the lower graph. And then the top one is the Syracuse. So our Syracuse city residents actually use more illegal drugs, which will be reflective in our newborns when they are. And you probably have heard this. I'm going to just take you back in some of the discussion which has happened a few years ago, that our rates of newborn born from a woman who has used illegal drugs, it's kind of mouthful at this point, that women, when they use drugs, illegal drugs, in the pregnancy, the children, when the infant, when they are born, they will suffer negative consequences. They'll go into withdrawal syndrome, which we call neonatal abstinence syndrome, which requires to have admission to the neonatal intensive unit. And these are the data from there. And a few years ago, we were actually had very high rates there. And that led to very strong partnership with the many community partner. As we are speaking, that effort has continued to go on and getting stronger every day with many community partners, including Learner Center and various community-based organizations. As a result, we started to see some down trending. But again, that's something we have to continue to keep that focus alive, and then make sure that we continue to achieve where should be. Ideally, they should be zero, but that's something we will do our best to do that. As in public health effort, it takes a long time to achieve something, but sustaining effect requires partnership. So here we are talking about New York State, excluding New York City, because New York City is always a outlier in the data because they always have sometimes very higher rates or sometimes lower rate because of different patient population, individual population there. But there is a little bit of bothersome uptrending in New York State, rest of the New York State also. This is a talk of the town. At this point, I just wanted to close with that a little bit. Is the heroin deaths are, this is the absolute number. Again, I'm going to show you a trend too. In 2010, this is from our medical examiner's office, we had one death from the heroin. And in 2014, we have 31 deaths in last 4 years, which is quite significant. And again, that goes into mental health. What is happening? Why are suicide rates are higher also? And if you look into the trend, this is just to look at that how exponentially fast it has grown from 2010 to 2014. This red graph is indicative of male population, and this the green part is green graph is of females. And you can see the bothersome uptrending pattern in the females also. So this is something, a continued ongoing conversation. As I'm speaking after this presentation, my first meeting today is also, we are partnered with multiple stakeholders, and that's what we are continuing to do that. So this is a very live conversation. But again, we cannot do anything without the community. I just wanted to throw a little bit of mouthful of disrupt. This is something somebody who is in a healthcare field, that something would be, is that disrupt is the purpose. This is the New York State Health Department of Health has given us a lot of dollar amount to the hospital to come up with creative ways to reach out to the community partners so that we can have a sustainable, healthy community. And that is... the hospitals are in charge of it, but we are partner in that also. Again, we are having what we call the system. I'm just going to remind that, not going to bore you with that. And in public health system, this is something you will have to remember. This is what I'm going to go back, and I like to persistent prevails, right? And as a person, what is your role? It's very important. I said a lot of things, what we do. But as a community member, I am responsible for not only as a commissioner, as a community member. And this is here, I'm going to just show you, we are part of the same puzzle. And when we do have a puzzle, we have to start put the pieces together to come up with a clear picture. When we have the clear, it looks like a little fuzzy, but when the clarity actually comes, we have a perfect masterpiece, as you can see, all of you, right? So with that, I think you would appreciate, I would like to remind you, and I would take any questions you may have. Thank you.
All right. We do have time for a couple of questions. Thank you.
Sorry, Fred, it took me a little longer. I apologize.
A lot of information there.
Hi, it was remarkable, yeah. I imagine for public health professionals, one of the most frustrating things is how people just don't take care of themselves. I mean, they stubbornly resist, like that first cartoon you showed, the first slide of all. And probably many would like to have more public health people would like to have more rules and laws and coercion and enforcement to force people to do the right thing. But if you could pick one or two things to make it a little more coercive, what rule would you like to see on the books to make us do the right thing?
So you ask a great question, and it goes to the basic theme of, does really some those regulations and all those things are very important in guidance, but can we do, like, enforce them? In certain areas, especially when we are talking health, people have very difficult time. They will actually go and buy the insurance for car, and they will do everything, even wearing the seatbelt. Some things are very important, but when we talk about, for example, in terms of obesity, you ask people to give up soda. No, they don't want to give up the soda. If you ask them to go and not drive and maybe exercise and go and ride the bicycle or walk, that is a very difficult thing to do. And I will just say that as even a practitioner, when I did as a healthcare provider, this is a very challenge I faced every day in my past life, is that how do you motivate people? Because I could tell them, I would tell people that, you know, you will die if you don't take care of yourself. You continue to smoke, this is going to take you where you don't want to go. But still does not change the behavior. It really doesn't. What is changes the behavior when people internalize it? So a lot of times when we accept things, it has sustainability. Rule of law works in certain areas, but in certain areas it does not work. So that's why we bring it to the table at that. Have everybody take this conversation. Things like charity starts from home. So everybody, a mother's role, a father's role, a family member's role, just to have the persistent lesson in educating what is important, what is health, and how we take care of ourselves. And if I have to pick anything, I think a lot of things are there which are being addressed. I think recent legislation, if you see in New York City, they have done in terms of soda, in terms of having the calorie count. All these things are there pretty much. But most of it, if you don't do, people actually rebel sometimes. So that actually defeats the purpose of it. The only time which mandatory regulations are important when we are talking negative grave consequences. For example, vaccination does become very important because it impacts so many people, even though there are exclusions there. But most of the time we cannot quote-unquote enforce a lot of times, but we strongly recommend and sort of, I think school officials and certain state become very strict about that. So in those areas, there should be much more enforcement because that actually affects the whole area of population from the infant to the elderly. So that is the one of area I think that should be continued and more enforcement will be very important.
Dr. Gupta, thank you very, very much.
Thank
you. I'll have to have you back.